brutally honest with me during the minutes. My next guest is a little bit different, as it is my partner, Jessica Bianchi, actress and author. We talk about some childhood trauma that she faced and she speaks about how to overcome these troubles and change the mindset.
So Jess, let's talk about firstly your book. What made you want to write your book, and what's it about?
So Silver Linings actually came out in I think January 2021, and I've been writing, I mean, throughout my life things that we, well, you obviously know this, but things have been difficult at stages, especially during my childhood, and I always thought there was a story to write down, but I never knew how to do it. And it wasn't until I think I hit a time of my life that it became, you know, it became a point where I could write it, and I knew what I was doing. I started working on myself, and as soon as I started to do that, things made a bit more sense. So I didn't want to just write down bad things after bad things that had gone on. I wanted to show people how I got through that, and that's why I named it Silver Linings, because it was like I listed things from childhood that had really impacted and traumatized my life into adulthood, but it wasn't until I figured out how that was affecting me, what patterns that was causing within my life, that I could change things around. And when I got to that stage of life, it felt like the perfect timing to write the book, because it then wasn't just a, oh, this is terrible, life's awful. It was now a book about hope. And I think as humans, the one thing we're always looking for is hope, hope for something better, hope for, you know, wellness, hope for all these different things. And that was the kind of premise of the book.
Okay, well, yeah, it's similar to my childhood. It was very, you know, a rough ride in different aspects, but, you know, still trauma. Do you feel now that you're doing your booking, speaking about it, getting it all off your chest, that you're in a better place now, and the things that did affect you then, you know, do they affect you now?
I think it's all about awareness. So for me, it was definitely therapeutic writing the book. But again, I think we're always learning and always growing and figuring stuff out about ourselves, where we go wrong in ourselves. So yes, in a respect, it healed some parts of me, but it also gave me a kind of launch pad to keep going with that. And I found, you know, things that I've wrote in the books, you know, that was about 3 years ago, I wrote it now, is that I'm still evolving. So there's some things that may be a bit different now. Things I would do differently, but the book itself is simply what got me through at that stage of my life. And like I said, we're always growing and evolving. So for instance, there was a lot of domestic violence in my family as a kid, and I became hyper aware of people's emotions, like I've always said this to you, if I notice a little tiny energy change or little micro expressions, I pick them up, because that was what I had to do as a kid to make sure I was safe. I think as humans, we're always looking to how to be safe and how to be protected, and our brain looks for ways to do that. So when you're thrust into a, you know, at such a young age, witnessing horrific domestic violence, you pick up things that not normal kids in a loving, safe home would. And I still notice things now in my adult life, even after the book, that will spur me off. And, you know, I'm sure you've noticed things with me when I've gone a bit nervous, and I have to work on that and be aware of what I'm doing, because it's not the same situation. And I read Will Smith's book, and there was this fable in it, which was about a monk who's, you know, he took his land was flooding, and he had to use his boat to get across to the other side of this other land. But this now was full of trees, and he had to pull the boat. And it's basically saying that if you don't get rid of the you know, a way that was saving you back in the day, if you use that in your future, it could destroy you. So something that saved you once could now destroy you. And that's how I look at it, because coping mechanisms from my childhood will destroy relationships in my adulthood, because it's a different scenario. And if you don't become aware of what these scenarios are and what these things that you use as tools have to adapt and change, you can end up destroying yourself. So it's all about just, my biggest thing for me is awareness of your own patterns and your own behavior. And as soon as you start to figure that out, I feel like that's when your life can really change around.
Okay. You were very spiritual Yeah, well, I know that. I see it in the mornings. Your Wim Hofs, you're meditating. Does that help you day to day, week to week?
Yeah.
Moving forward. How important is that to you?
It's for me, like I did it this morning. I got up and I sat on the balcony and I do my 10 minutes or 20 minutes meditation. I see meditation as like an anchor for your thoughts. Like we shower every day to clear our bodies, but we're not clearing our minds each day. Whereas I sit out there and you learn to stop this constant chatter. And I'm sure you're aware of it. I'm sure we all are. There's a voice in your head and it's always talking. It's always trying to get you to do this.
Is that in your head?
I'm going to. He thinks I'm always talking all the time anyway. So.
It's definitely not in your head, babe.
Oh,
definitely gosh. Slips out. But yeah, carry on.
Yeah. Yes, I do talk a lot in general. However, if you imagine that in my head as well, it's never non-stop. But no, we all have this voice in our head. You know, we overthink, we worry, we have times of, you know, especially in times of stress, we'll overthink and we'll not be able to sleep, and it causes us all these problems within our body. And I notice when I don't meditate, as a time when we've been together, I stopped doing it for a while and I started overthinking again. And I thought, okay, well, last time I had this problem, I was meditating a lot, morning and night, and I managed to find myself in a really good place. And I think anchoring your thoughts is the same as washing away dirt on your body. It gives you that time to be with yourself and stop that chatter. And for especially for overthinkers, learning how to stop the chatter is really important, because one thought can spiral and spiral and spiral down. It's like in this book, The Monkey Mind, it explains how, you know, we'll go from one thought, and by the time we finish this thought, we're down this rabbit hole. We don't even know how we've got there, just swinging from branch to branch with these thoughts. But actually, we're creating scenarios in our head that are way worse than they are. And if you think of just what the actual thing is, what the problem is, if you didn't overthink it, when the problem actually occurs, it's not as bad as you thought. It's the same as if you do a bungee jump, you're standing on the edge and you're thinking of all the things that could go wrong. But if you just didn't think and you just did it, the end of it, you're elated. Like, I've done a bungee jump and that was the thing. I was going up thinking there's no chance I'm doing this. But when I just stopped my thought process and just jumped, it was so elating. And the thing is never as bad as what we build it up to be in our head. And I think meditation, for me, helps anchor that and make me see things clearly.
Yeah, I've never really meditated, but I have done the cold shower,
yes,
which you caught me doing today, actually. It's a 30-second blast I had.
And screaming like
I was screaming.
Girl.
Yes, I was like an infant. Yes, I certainly was. It was very cold. I don't think cold really sits on me, but you do feel better after it for sure. You know, now I'm feeling all chilled and nice and fresh and energized, and it does work wonders. I just want to go back a bit. Obviously, you talked about you had a lot of domestic violence growing up as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure people listening, you know, females, males, maybe have been through the same path and endured the same, you know, the same battles. What is the best way to move on from that or to deal with that and not have a massive impact and for it to control your life?
I don't think there's a specific way to make life easier for people that have had that. I think it's all about working on you. And some of the repercussions for that for me were dating people that would beat me up, you know, do the same things, treat me bad, because that was my idea of what love was, because that's what I'd seen. It's about recognizing that, because I couldn't recognize why I was. I mean, there was times where I would let someone attack me and I wouldn't break up with them. If they cheated on me, I would. But if they hit me, that wasn't warrant to break up with someone. And I look back and I'm like, how was that thought process there? Well, it's obviously I became aware that that's there because of what I grew up with, and I thought that was normal when it's not normal. I don't think there's a specific way. I think it's an individual process of understanding that that isn't love. And it, for me, it was working on myself and becoming aware of that. It definitely affected my adult life. I mean, at school, I really struggled academically before I went to theatre school, simply because I had PTSD at such a young age and wasn't even aware of having that. So if a teacher, for instance, I couldn't focus in on a class, if they'd shout at me, that would make me go into panic mode. And I couldn't even answer a question that was basic questions, because I was in panic mode and I was scared. I think talking as a kid is important, because I was kind of told, you know, don't tell anyone because you could get taken away, because that was actually how it would work back in the day. It was, you know, now the domestic violence laws are different. They're now, if a policeman comes to a domestic situation, they press the charges, whereas before the family member had to press the charges. And often that wasn't happening because of fear, or because of family loyalties, or whatever their situation is. So it could keep happening and happening and happening. But the law is now that the police will press charges against the person that is the perpetrator. And that, I think that eases off a lot for children going through what I did in this day and age. But for me, that wasn't there. So I've had to, you know, it impacted my education. It impacted my relationships. It impacted my trust in people, especially in men. And this was, you know, this was just one of the things. But, you know, my mum had a boyfriend once, and he ended up being domestic abuse in a different way. It was more psychological. And I remember we were walking in the dark, and mum's always had poor eyesight before she went blind, so she couldn't see very well in the dark. And this boyfriend was saying, you know, I think I was nine, I said, that little bitch, she's jealous of me, and about me trying to walk my mum back safely. And all of these things have impacts on you as a little girl or a little boy. You know, they'll all have impact of your self-worth, of where your place is in the world. And I think we all have bad things that happen to us. I don't think there's anyone that can say they've had the easiest life, because life is never linear. There's always ups and downs, no matter what. And I think as long as you know fault and responsibility, and again, I'm going to quote Will Smith on that, because fault and responsibility, it's not my fault. It's not your fault that you were brought up in a scary place. It wasn't your fault that your mum left at a young age. It wasn't my fault that there was domestic violence in the house. It wasn't my fault that there was these horrible men around. However, it's my responsibility now to make sure my life doesn't continue like that. And I think when you take responsibility for your life and what you want from life, you'll go ahead and get it. But when we sit in victim mode, which I did for a long time in my 20s, especially my early 20s, I thought all this bad shit has happened to me, and I can't have, you know, this is not my fault, and this is just my cards. You sit there, your life's always going to stay there. It's until you take responsibility for it and say, I don't want that life for my future family. I don't want that life for myself. I don't want to feel like this anymore, is the point where you can change it around. And I think when, like you said, if you've got advice for someone growing up with that, it would simply be as trying to become aware of it and aware of your patterns and listen to podcasts like this, listen to other people's stories. And it helps you become, you know, get your own awareness from it. And as soon as you get that, that's when you can start changing things around for yourself.
Listening to you there, we've gone through this exactly the same thing, but polar opposite. As in, yours is, you know, men and domestic violence and aggression. Mine is, you know, mother, women, and being abandoned. I feel an abandonment. And I guess that's why we get along so well. Well, I hope so. It goes to show how important your crucial years of being a child and the development, how things, little things can impact you in your adult life, whether it's, you know, alcohol, being around alcohol, being around drugs, is the environment you're in, how it takes its toll on you on your adult life. And if you're surrounded by chaos, you know, moving forward in teenage years, adult life, you will find chaos. It's so important to, as a parent, maybe protect their children to a certain extent.
Yeah, what you were saying about chaos is exactly that. Our brains will always seek what's familiar, not necessarily what's good for us. So I know that dating people that was the same as the person in the household that was creating the domestic violence was not good for me, but it was familiar, so I felt safe. Because we look for what is familiar, because that's our comfort, that's our safety. So we'll actively seek out, either in your case, maybe people that will abandon you, people that will use you, people that will, you know, go off the rails, people that love a drink. That's what we'll actively seek out, and that's what I was doing. But it's until you can start putting that work that you're always trying to, I'm assuming, obviously being your girlfriend, I kind of know, but you seek out people that wasn't there for you. You'd mask things, and that's what then you'd attract the people from your mask almost. Knowing you as a person in your true, in your heart, you're a very loving, very kind, very, very deep person when you want to be, but you mask it. And I think I was doing the same. I just turned into a party girl in my 20s. And I thought my validation will be through people. I was like, okay, I want to be an actress, but there's a reality show come on, so I'm going to do that because that's going to give me a validation. And at the time it was, but it wasn't a healthy validation. And I wasn't aware of that. And it took me to get to the other side to realize who I truly am, figure out who I am. Because you, like you said, development as a young child is so crucial. So my development was very, very restricted because I was in protective safety mode all the time, trying to protect my mum, trying to protect anyone in the household. And I missed out on the crucial development, which is I'm safe, I'm loved, I've got hobbies, I've got this. When you're in survival mode, which you would have been as well, you don't have that development stage. So you suddenly, you can become whoever you need to be in different scenarios. You're never actually being yourself. So when you can't be yourself, you get to a certain age and you're like, who the fuck am I? You don't know who you are. And I think that's when depression comes in. And so without that crucial development and the parents looking after you in the correct way, but then also I remember you can't blame your parents because they're only surviving the way they know how to as well. And I think when we take blame off of people, that also forces us into take responsibility. Because, you know, my mum's coping mechanisms back in the day, she was a young mum, was to go out to the pub with her friends. And, you know, that would take her mind off of the things that was going on at home. But that was then leaving me a bit abandoned. But that was not because she didn't love me. And it's the same with my real dad. He didn't not love me. He had an alcohol problem. So therefore, we didn't speak for a while. It wasn't that he didn't love me. He didn't know how to love himself. So I can't blame them for what had happened. They were surviving the only way they knew how with their own mental health problems. So I now have responsibility for my life. And in fact, when I took that, it kind of helped them because then mum was seeing things differently. And dad, as you know, my dad's in a hospice now with lung cancer, all sorts of things, and he hasn't got long left on this earth. But where I used to be kind of bitter towards dad, I don't feel like that anymore. I feel like when it comes to my dad now, I'm like, I've healed something because I'm now going to see him every day. And I take the positives from that. And I think he didn't not love me. He loved me very much, but he didn't know how to love himself. So how can he love me in the correct manner? And that's taking responsibility. And therefore my life can be beautiful because I don't have that animosity towards anyone.
Yeah, it's when no matter what you've been through as a child, what trauma you've had to overcome, you know, and I'm not blaming no parents, but again, because they've probably been brought up to a certain way and they don't know much different, but you can change your own future. No matter how much trauma or difficulty there is, there's always light at the end of that tunnel. And it's all about identifying the main issue to then go on either then speak about it, to then get the best help to address it. And there's always hope.
That's the thing as well. When we look for hope, I'm reading a book at the minute by Mark Manson. It's called Everything's Effed. I won't say the swear word on the podcast. That's the one. And it is about humans always looking for hope. And I think if we hold on to that, there's always this hope of something better. But that will give you the ammo to address it for yourself, because there's not someone coming to save you. I always thought, you know, I watched a lot of Disney and I thought, oh, I'll be safe from this kind of life. And I watched
Disney, loads of it.
Well, don't even go there because you seen Moana.
I was watching Disney. I was watching football videos.
Telling lies. He's telling lies. I'll let you get away with that.
I think I had a Disney Channel.
No, like, well, videos. But I would look at this perfect life and I think, oh, someone will save me. And when you go into think someone will save me, you're stuck in victim mode still. You can have someone come along and enhance your life, but no one's going to make your life better unless you're secure in yourself. And I learned that the hard way. I thought, you know, I was so messed up, and even if very codependent as well back in the day. And it wasn't until I realized that about myself that things could change. So I was hoping for the person to come along and save me. But someone can come and look after you and be a nice person to you, But you're never going to respond to that well if you haven't healed your inner trauma, because that's always going to be there. I could have had, you know, I've dated people that were lovely and they were the nicest people in the world, but I couldn't cope with that because I didn't know, I was still messed up in myself. So I'd have meltdowns and there was nothing wrong, but I hadn't fixed what my core issues were, which were feeling abandoned, which were being scared all the time, which, you know, PTSD, I didn't know I had, post-traumatic stress disorder. And all these things affect your body, like physically. So I didn't grow for a long time because of the stress levels in my house. I was tiny. I think when I was in year 11, I was the same size as year 7. My puberty started extremely late because I didn't. Why are you laughing?
Could you say that I didn't grow? I'm thinking, at what point did you grow?
You horrible little man. Listen, I'm 5'4", I'm average, okay? But no, it affects you physically. And this is why I do a lot of Wim Hof, because the physical, what his method does to you, moves things around your body. Stress literally can make you ill. Stress can bring on heart attacks. Stress can cause cardiovascular problems. Stress can cause all these physical ailments upon your body. And that's why Wim Hof, when I found his method about 3 or 4 years ago, before it became well known, I started doing his cold showers and his breathing. And I noticed it will move the stress from my body. And I can't tell you about the scientifics behind that because I've only done what I've read in his book and kind of followed him. But if we hold on to stress, it, you know, you get stomach problems, you get all these different things, and we need to move that out of our body. And I think not only doing the psychological work on the things that hurt us and becoming aware of them, and look, the best way to fix a pattern I've found is if you're in the middle of it and you notice, because that's the awareness of it, and then you can start changing things. You can't change what you don't know. And I think that's the most important thing to remember.
Oh, I'm no spring chicken, but I'm not old. Mm-hmm. And it's only now I've identified and understood my patterns, and that mental health, that I was depressed at times, you know, when I was low in them dark places. I just thought I was just, you know, oh, just upset a little bit here and there. But no, it was definitely depression. And it's only now that I'm aware of that. And I, again, like I said, identifying what's causing me sometimes to have that dark journey. So it's never too late.
No.
And it's just all about wanting to change that pattern. You know, you could be doing something that you think, why is nothing working for me? Why am I always in this situation? It's just about finding the solution, finding what's causing these issues in your life, and then wanting to change them and make a better life for yourself.
Yeah, and again, identifying them, like what is easy to see with you from knowing you as we are now to looking back in the past of you, your abandonment issues came out in, you know, partying to mask the fact that you were down, because that would give you a high. And then women to, you know, get rid of the abandonment. Yeah. You'd actively chase women because then you're filling a gap that was there for so, so long. But now that you've identified that and you're realizing who you are without all of that, and what you are and what you offer to the world without having to say, oh, look, I'm a footballer, or I'm this, and this gives me my value. When you realize how valuable you are as a person, just as you are, without any of the glitz and glam around that, the mask is down and you're your true vulnerable self. And in vulnerability and being honest, especially what you're doing in the podcast, it's very vulnerable for you to open up and for anyone to open up and say, you know, what they're feeling inside. But the minute you can hit that vulnerability, you realize there's no fear in that anymore. And you realize people love you for who you are, and the ones that didn't filter out. So it's actually one of the most strongest places you can be, even though people would say vulnerability, you know, back in the day, it's weakness, talking about that's weakness. It's actually the strongest you can ever be, is being vulnerable, because you're being your true self, and that there's no mask. And you'll find the people that are around you when you can be there are the ones you want to keep in your life.
Yeah, one thing I have noticed is with me is emotions. I've shown now my emotions. Obviously, having a difficult upbringing, you know, no feeling, like I said, abandonment, no love, no structure, no stability in it. Literally, you know, taking care of myself, taking myself to school from the age of 8. When things was dark and horrible. I just used to just, you know, shut off my emotions, and that was my defense mechanism. Where now, if something does bother me, if something is down, I will cry about it. I will speak about it. Where before I was like ice cold, and putting a mask guard and all my armor. Where you peel that back, and I advise all men to, you don't have to be macho. You can be a softy at times, and it's good to cry. It's good to be emotional and express it. It is, and that's helped me me a lot.
I think the strongest men I know are the ones that can speak about their mind, because when you shut down, you've never had that maternal love, and you also had to deal with your emotions as a kid all by yourself.
Yeah.
And that's caused you to shut down. And when you shut down, your tornado goes through your life, because it comes out in different ways. Mm. Pain is always going to come out in some sort of way. And yours was going off the rails, maybe. But I think, like I said, the strongest people I know are the ones that can speak. And you as a man now, what I know and what I see is that when you can speak about things, you're showing me your strength. And I think where the world is changing now, men are able to speak, women and men are feeling more comfortable in speaking, we're producing stronger humans. And I think, you know, hard times make strong people. And if we can take a silver lining out of hard times in our childhood, and missing out on certain things, missing out on love, missing out on you being able to go to your mum and say, oh, well, there's been a bully in the school, you know, just anything that a kid would need a parent for, which you didn't have, bringing it out now, that strength, because you've had it shut down for so long. And I think anyone that holds stuff in realizes at one point that it's destroying them. And, you know, we're humans, and humans need connection. And I think you find connection through hard times a lot of the time. And you can find connection through joy as well. And connecting and, you know, being with people that have suffered similar things, we're connecting and we're talking, and it's producing a generation of people that are more secure because they're able to show their vulnerability.
Yeah, what I found is that, you know, I'll make an example. Do you know when something's great's happened?
Mm.
You're so eager to tell people, to show people, because it makes you feel great. But what, there's no difference into the opposite. When something's bad or dark or you're kind of ashamed or embarrassed, then to tell someone about it, because you get the same impact will come from it. As in when you're on the high, obviously you get happy, but if you're low, that will also help.
Yeah.
Rather than keeping the badness in and not speaking about it, it will eat you away from inside.
Yeah.
It will eat you away from inside. But if you can share the darts as well, it will put you on a nice plateau.
I think a problem shared is a problem halved. And it's an age-old saying, but it's very true. And anytime I've ever held stuff in, I've gone completely off the rails. And when I felt my lowest is when I haven't felt I could share with people what's going on, or when I haven't felt safe to talk to someone. I think speaking, you kind of figure out who you feel safe around. You pick up people's energy. You know who's got your back, who's there for you. And I think finding those people comes from sharing vulnerability. And also our dark side, we don't always want to share it. We don't want to be like, you know what, I'm having a crap day because I'm feeling insecure. But one thing that I found so, so good in our relationship is that I'm able to say to you, rather than me kicking off like my previous relationship, I've been like, you are this, you're that, you've treated me bad. When I worked on myself and now I've got into a relationship with you, I feel like I can say to you, I'm actually feeling insecure, or I'm not having a go at you. I'm going to tell you what's exactly my feelings are. And so you bypass the anger, you bypass any shouting matches which don't resolve anything. You say, oh, this has made me feel insecure. Or you might say something to me, this has made me feel this type of way. And when you go into the actual yourself and what the feelings are, it makes it so much easier to talk about and fix any issues. I think problems so many times you see in relationships is that someone's hurt, so they react from hurt. They go with anger, and anger is a secondary emotion to sadness. So if you can be honest with your sadness and what's making you feel a type of way, it's easily fixed and resumed. And I think communication and vulnerability and, you know, these type of things help move things forward in all relationships, whether it be a parental relationship. Like me and my mum used to argue like, oh my God, we were terrible. But when I started doing the work on me, the meditation, figuring out what was wrong with me and why I was doing these certain things. I could sit down and say, you know, I'm not mad of you for this. I just feel this is making me feel this way, or this is triggering something from the past. We could sit down and have great conversations.
And how was your mum take that now?
She didn't take it well at first. But I wasn't handling it well at first when I would say, you know, Mum, I remember one time I said, Mum, I felt abandoned when you go to the pub, because I knew it was going to come when this person walked through the door and I'd be terrified. And she'd be like, defensive, because she felt guilty about it. And it wasn't until I realised, why am I making my mum feel guilty about something that she was trying to fix in her own way because she was terrified herself? I had to go back to, you were coping the best way you knew how, and that is not your fault at all. It is, you know, things happen in life. Just like, you know, this is a really dark example, but you know when a mother gets a new boyfriend and they end up being a paedophile or something awful like that you see in newspapers? That mum didn't know that was happening, and the kid can't hold that. You know, I can't tell them how they can and can't face something. But if you realise that no one's, your parent that is truly loving of you wouldn't want that to have happened, you have to take that blame away and just be like, you were doing the best you could at that time. And that healed a lot of things with me and my mum. And we have the most fantastic relationship now. We drive each other bonkers, we just do, but we love each other to the core. And it was never a situation of, oh, well, anymore it's not a situation of, oh, you should have done this differently or you should have done that. The fact is it wasn't done differently. And the fact is that bad things were happening and she was coping. And, you know, how can I say any different that if I was in that situation, if I had a child and terrible things are happening in the house, how would I cope? I don't know, because I've never been in that situation. So I can only say this, none of this is your fault, but it's our responsibility to make a better future.
Okay, that's a strong end there. You're a very wise girl, got a lot of knowledge from your endeavors in life. You are now writing almost finished, am I correct?
Yeah, I've got about six chapters.
Six chapters of a new book. Have you got a title for it?
I don't. This is the first one I felt struggled
with. Wait, first of all, tell us what it's regarding, what it's about, what we can read when we pick up this book.
So it's more of a toolkit, I would say. And I explain, to the first chapter is awareness, because that's what, you know, the premise of this podcast, I think, has been me talking about awareness. Because I feel like that's the first step. And then it will go into meditation and tools what I use, or thought processes I've used to help me get over certain trials and tribulations in my life, whether it be boundary setting, because as a kid with domestic violence and some kind of abandonment issues from my other family members, there is abandonment issues, which abandonment issues often lead to boundary issues in your adult life. And then you work these things out and you see where it's come from, you can fix it. So it's kind of like each chapter goes through what tools we need to make sure we're loving ourselves enough to set boundaries to people that can't take advantage, to stop us from people pleasing, to control our thoughts, to all these different things that impact our life in a negative way, how we can use them to make our lives positive. And that's the idea of the book.
Yeah, obviously you've asked me for some help along the way. No, just to go over some, you know, when you're reading it out to me, does this make sense? And, you know, I'm going to say, I can't wait for it to, not just because you're sitting there, I can't wait for it to actually, till you finish it. It's going to be a good one. And also, what's on the horizon for Jessica in Piazzi?
Well, lots of things, actually.
I know, but the listeners don't, so let's tell them.
So obviously my whole life I went to theatre school and it was always acting that I wanted to do. And, you know, that's just been my goal. I was about to go into, I know trying to wrap up, but purpose and goals was a big thing of mine in a recent chapter, because my goal is acting. And I always found when I wasn't doing it, I was depressed, but I was using that as my purpose. So that's a chapter in the new book, is purpose and goals. We have goals and we strive for things, but it should never be our purpose. Our purpose should be the things we find joy in our everyday lives. Like just the little things that make life wonderful. If we lose sight of that and just focus solely on our goals, I think we can get ourselves in a pickle, basically. So anyway, on to that. I have got a comedy series launching on Amazon at the end of August, I think early September time, with Harriet Thorpe from Absolutely Fabulous, who plays my mother, and Kelly Shirley, who plays my sister. who's from The Office. So I've got quite a cool lineup for that. Then at the end of the year, we haven't had exact dates, but I got my first big BBC job on Strike, Troubled Blood, the new season. So that's coming out at the end of the year. And a little film. Oh, well, it's actually quite a big film, but I had a smaller part in this for, I think it's on Apple TV. That's coming out at the end of the year too. So it's a big year. I was planting seeds for a good few years, and now I'm seeing the fruit come to fruition, which is really exciting. And just, you know, I think when you get in a good place, good things follow. And I'm kind of living proof of that now.
Yeah, you've got a lot of stuff coming out on TV, which I'm sure we'll get the popcorn out and we'll be binge watching. It just goes to show, though, doesn't matter where you came from, what you didn't get, what you got, silver spoon, no silver spoon, that whatever your dream is, you can't, don't give up, you know, doesn't matter how difficult it may be. Never give up, because like you said yourself, you've been through domestic violence that could have easily just, you know, made you into a different person, but you were strong. You try to make, you know, the best of a bad situation, and you continue to focus on your goal, and you've reached your dream to be an actress.
Yeah, I think, you know, things happen in life that can derail us. And, you know, like I said, I always wanted to act. I think I was talking about the room, dancing, acting, singing. But there's...
I'm talking,
obviously. Yeah. but there's always, you know... That's all I wanted to do, but things happen. Life is always going to happen. So whether it be domestic violence, I lost my nephew when he was 13 months old and I was 17, and my mum went blind and dad is an alcoholic. That wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Everyone has something in their life that is going to derail you or make things not easy, but it's about how you use them to build yourself as a person, build your strength and what you do with that. And now, even with you and doing the podcast, I do my own podcast. In my intrinsic goal is not just the acting now, it's also about helping others through that. I find joy in that, and that gives me purpose. And I think, yeah, never give up, because what makes you happy, search for it, find it, and never give up with it.
Yeah, even the uncomfortable parts, like, you know, when I first started this podcast, I was shitting it. I was thinking, can I do it? Is it going to sound well? But I don't care. I enjoy it. I enjoy getting the message across, getting the message out there. If it helps one person, then job done, I'm happy. And because I know there's people out there who probably listen, who's been in both of our situations. So if my and your insight and advice and how to deal with what we've been through and what they may be going through, then this is the whole purpose of this podcast.
Exactly, and help people along the way.
Help people along the way.
And never give up on your goals. Like you were just saying you were nervous doing the podcast starting. I remember us having the conversation, said, what are you scared of? You said, it doesn't do very well or people don't like it. Right. I said, why does it matter? And then as soon as we kind of got to the crux of why it was making you scared, the fear was no longer there. So it's taking that jump, what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it's always, you know, face your fears, and they're not always bad as they, you know, made out to be or how you think they are. Like, now I'm doing a podcast, so I feel like I'm David Attenborough, you know what I mean?
We're talking to a lot of animals.
the knowledge is way up there. But no, it's been absolutely smashing having you on, and you're going out now, aren't you?
You can get some lunch.
Yeah,
and you're gonna edit this. Back to work.
While you're lunching, I'll be editing. Yeah, we're doing a bit of editing. I'm deleting some of the worst parts. I'm joking.
It's all good. It's all good parts.
It's all good parts. I know. It's all good. So, Jess, thank you for coming on.
Anytime.
Thank you for coming on The Brutally Honest. I'm looking in your eyes while I'm saying this. It's kind of weird. But it's been great. It's been a pleasure hearing your story again. It never gets old, but I'm sure the listeners are pleased to hear this, and hopefully it can help you all out there does me.
Thank you, darling.
My pleasure, darling.
Bye.
Take care now.
Thank you for tuning in, for listening, and I will thank Jess later. But from me, from Jess, take care.